Good afternoon, planet Earth. Good afternoon to the stroblek creatures of the final sector of the final battle. Good afternoon to the pirates that are currently ravaging the seas off of Australia. Good afternoon to the space captains battling beyond the moon. We know what you're up to, space captains. It is August. August the 19th, 2021. Right around 12:30 p.m. in Utah. Some people call it the beginning of lunchtime. Some people call it the end. Yes, indeed. But if you're listening on a shortwave radio set, this could be 5950 kilohertz. This could be WRMI out of Miami, Okeechobee, Saturday or Sunday night, 11 till midnight, Eastern Standard Time, the Planetary Status Report with your friend Dan. And I'm just here to tell you what's going on, baby. I don't have all the answers. I'm just a drifter hobo. I'm the dude that if you see me walking towards your enclave in the year 2022, you'll turn me away, baby. That's if you're smart. You'll leave me for the coyotes. They will feast upon me. The vulture will be my friend. The owl will be my pallbearer. The eagle will be the only person that attends. First topic, but like I said, if you're listening on shortwave radio, this is either Saturday or Sunday night. It might be sometime between 11 p.m. and midnight Eastern Standard Time. 5950 kilohertz from that swamp, WRMI, from Florida, where Florida man still lives. Florida man still lives. We all know this. This gives us hope. If nature cannot destroy Florida man, then we all have hope, brothers and sisters. First topic. But before I go to the first topic, I just want to let you know that if you are listening on a shortwave radio, you can get to the notes for this podcast broadcast by going to dfgtc.org/shownotes. That's Delta Foxtrot Golf Tango Charlie .org/shownotes. And if you pick the right date, my brothers and sisters, you'll manage to find the right notes for the right show if I have my stuff together. But these are weird times, brothers and sisters. We don't all have our crap together all the time. Sometimes we stare into the mirror in the darkness and we scream, we scream, we scream. Sometimes when we're walking our dog, we fantasize about releasing the hounds upon that nasty person down the street, the one with the greasy eyes, the one with the dark glare, the one that thinks she's so fancy because she's over there. We see you, baby. Our Rottweilers are hungry. Our pit bulls must feed. Our pit bulls must feed. First topic. You know, I'm really lucky right now. I can't afford a psychotherapist. I'm not even sure I'd recommend one. I had a kind of a Jungian counselor when I was living in Seattle after my mom died and up until the point my sister died of cancer. This was like 2010, 2011, 2012. And, you know, it was nice to have somebody who would listen to me. I think my ex-wife was tired of it, and I don't blame her. I mean, you listen to my podcast, believe me. Would you really want to live with that? Would you want to live with the piano preacher? Probably not. But then again, you might enjoy listening from a distance, right? But to live with that? That opening into the chasm of the brutal truth? Or perhaps the brutal madness? Nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. But I can't afford a therapist right now anyway, so it's irrelevant. And I'm not really sure a therapist could help. I mean, what do you tell a 51-year-old man at this point in human history? What do you say? You know, I don't think there's anything to say. This is what I say. There have always been times when finding reasons to exist is hard. And if you suffer from depression, and I do, finding reasons to exist can be hard in good times. But in times like this, it can even seem more difficult. Although I do think there are some strange psychological phenomena at play here. Because, you know, I get depressed, but I am not that depressed right now. But I can't afford a therapist, so I'm lucky. They have three dogs here. Three dogs. Three wonderful, amazing dogs. I'm not going to name them. I'm not going to dox them. I'll tell you, one is a Shar Pei of some sort. The others I really can't identify. One is this huge German farm dog, and it's a beautiful dog. The other is just a really cute little helpful dog. And then the Shar Pei's got an attitude, but I understand why. All three of them are amazing, and as dumb as this sounds, just being able to take them for a walk has been a blessing. It's really been one of those things where I can kind of forget, even if just for 5 or 10 or 15 minutes or 20 minutes or however long, I can forget the things that are plaguing me right now, the demons that are chasing me right now. It's not a perfect solution. It's a lot like marijuana. You know, does it help with panic attacks? Yeah. Does it help with, you know, sleeplessness? Yes. Is it perfect? No. We're not in Eden, brothers and sisters. Things don't work perfectly here. I know that some of you suffer from OCD. Who knows why? Maybe it is some sort of environmental damage that results in all kinds of autism and OCD. But here's the deal. This is not the perfect universe. This is the universe where things break. This is the universe where it's neither half full nor empty. The glass is broken on the floor, baby. That doesn't mean it's all bad, but it's not perfect. But these dogs are amazing, and I can even go as far to say that I care about them enough that I'd say I love them. You know, as much as a human can love a dog, I've fallen in love with these dogs. They're great animals. They're decent. They're a little bit strange, but then so am I. And they seem to give a crap about me, and they don't really ask for much in return. I mean, yeah, you know, there's always those personalities, and I don't want to go into that. And certainly, I think they've gotten used to, you know, if I come home with anything like a chicken strip, they can usually smell it from half a mile away. It's, oh, Dan's got chicken strips. And so, yeah, if I come home with chicken strips, I do feel as if they feel entitled. They do feel entitled to some chicken strips. And I don't blame them. I don't blame them. Maybe that's what I'm paying for the therapy. But this is the brutal truth, brothers and sisters. If I love these dogs, I have to accept the reality of the place I'm in. Currently, I can afford to rent a room. Currently, I can afford to live where I'm at. You know, as imperfectly as it is, it's not so bad. I think it's actually pretty good in a lot of ways. But at some point in the future, I know the deal. You have to know the deal. If you're on the Titanic, okay, or let's not say the Titanic. Let's say you're on some sailboat. You're on a sailboat and no, actually, you're not on a sailboat. People on board a sailboat see you. You're just adrift at sea. You're a drifter hobo at sea. You're just out there drifting at sea. The waves are pushing you around. The tide is moving you towards the horizon. Imagine you are a drifter who, for whatever reason, got cast away at sea. You're holding on to a log or some piece of debris from some ship that exploded, maybe because a Nazi submarine fired its torpedo through time. Time torpedoes, yeah. Zeit torpedoes, Zeitpedoes. Those things were terrible. Yeah, time torpedoes. Whatever the reason, you are lost at sea. Okay, I'm going to drink a little bit of coffee here, if that's okay. For whatever reason, you're lost at sea. And a sailboat with a family on board comes along and picks you up. And at first, you know, they have food for you and you help out and you do what you can. And listen, they even have some dogs on board. But let's say for this example, they just have kids. And the reality is, it's a nice family and you do what you can to help. But they end up running out of wind. There's no wind. They have no fuel for the engine. They're in the doldrums. They've been in the doldrums, which means they can't go anywhere. And it's really hot. And there's not enough fresh water. And they have about enough food for another couple weeks. And that's including, you know, you, the guy, the person, the woman who just showed up. 2 weeks of water, 2 weeks of food left. Now, if it were me and this family saved me, helped me, because that's a key part of the story. They pulled you out of the ocean. If it were me, I would probably say to the family, listen, you're going to have to purify water. That's certainly true. And let's talk through that. Let's fix that up. Get it going. But food's another issue. And I guess got to say, I'm going to let you know. After I get done helping you set up a solar still really kind of, you know, fast, whatever, I'll just, you know, go down to the bottom. Or better yet, I have a better idea. I'm like fish food. You could lure fish. You could catch yourself a fish and you could purify that water and you could live. And I'll tell you why. Because I was the last person to show up. And I know this sounds brutal. I know it sounds terrible, but you can't just assume that life is going to be so nice and so straightforward that your choices will be easy. And when it comes to actual trolley problems, okay, this is an example of a real problem. You were picked up out of the ocean. They saved your life. You would have died anyways. They picked you out of the ocean, they saved your life, and now there's only so much food left, so much water. I think an honorable person would basically go back in the ocean. Maybe they might ask for a life preserver, maybe if there's a dinghy, but probably back into the ocean would be the honorable thing to do. I know that sounds crazy, and I also know that sounds easy, because I'm not in that situation, or am I? My friend, who I rent a room from, drove to Seattle to get me out of that hellhole, that snake pit. I think I would be dead right now for lots of different reasons if he hadn't done this. I'm still alive, which means he bought me time. I would have died in Seattle. He helped me. He brought me here to Utah, to the paradise that is Utah, and, you know, given me a chance to survive. And he's not the only friend that's done this. I've had friends and family who have helped me from drowning in recent years. And I'm not proud that I've needed the help. I don't know that it makes you good or bad to ask for help. But in terms, especially in terms of my listeners, I've had a few listeners that are hugely, hugely generous. And they have kept me from, like, getting kicked out into the streets, for example. And these people are amazing. And this new friend, my friend here in Utah, is added to that list of people that have helped me out a great deal. Understand all of this when I say that if we got into a crisis with the food, and I don't know if this is funny or dark, but I've already told them, I said, listen, I said, okay, the other day we were sitting around with the dogs, we were just chilling out talking. And I looked at the two giant bags of dog food. They had like a couple 50-pound bags. Oh, we all know how it's not really 50 pounds anymore. But they had a couple of these almost 50-pound bags of dog food. And I said, about how long will one of those bags last? And I think the answer was, I don't know, maybe 3 weeks, maybe 5 weeks, maybe 6 weeks, I don't know. And so the first thought I had was, I've got 6 weeks to live when we run out of food because I don't want the dogs to die. I know that's messed up. I know that's totally messed up. I would rather have my nasty body chopped up into something that can be eaten. I've seen what these dogs eat, and I know it's terrible. Dan, if you feed them human, they'll start eating human. I don't know. Is any of this that simple? You remember the story of that soccer team that got caught up in the Andes? And it came down to, do you want to die or are you willing to eat another person once they're dead? Are you willing to be a cannibal? And I don't think I could be a cannibal. And I gotta say, that has happened in human history at different points, at different times. It is not ancient history. During the siege of Leningrad, there is evidence that there was a level of cannibalism. And there have been other times more recent than even World War II when this sort of thing has happened. And I believe there may even be a few tribes left out there that practice some kind of cannibalism, ritualistic or whatever. So, you know, if you were up there in the Andes, what would you do? And then you say, okay, well, I would eat them if they're dead, maybe. That's what you got to do. You got to do, you know, ask for the Lord's forgiveness afterwards, but do what you have to do to survive. And I get that argument. I do. But there is a kind of brutality to that position, a brutality that lacks compassion. I'm not saying the soccer people should have just died, but I would have been equally okay if they had. Like, the choice to live by eating another person, whether you killed them or not, or just to starve to death, that's a hard choice, I guess, but I don't know what I would do. I don't know if I would. I think I might say, listen, if you want to eat me, here's what you got to know. My meat is imbued with decades of poisons. My mind has been driven crazy by parasites. I have all kinds of weird bug diseases that you only get by eating cattle in Brazil. So go ahead and chow down, baby. But instead, I'd recommend raising pigs and just toss me to the pigs. The pigs can eat me. You can eat the pigs. I know that's messed up and dark, brothers and sisters. But it's one of those questions I ask, because the one thing I don't want to be is a burden to people. And I know that I'm not the only person that feels that way. I don't have any communist expectations that I'm owed a living. I currently have work, but I don't know how long that will last. And one of the biggest problems that I'm struggling with right now is I don't have enough faith in the system to really do the work I'm doing as well as I could. You know, it's work related to markets and economics and business. And I think all that is about to come to an end. I don't know what comes next. I'm hoping if we're lucky, we get a chance to revisit human liberty, even if times are hard, and potentially rebuild natural organic markets from the ground up. That would be great to live in a free world. That could happen. But I don't think the current status quo can continue. I don't care what version you hear. Even the Jim Rickards, we're all going to use the magical super SDR. And if you don't know who Jim Rickards is, you can look him up yourself. You know, the special drawing rights, which has a nice, really kind of cryptic insider kind of description to it. Yeah, even people like Jim Rickards, I think they're wrong too. I don't think there's an exit hatch. I don't think there's a magical entropy hole. Everyone wants to convince you that it can be China or Russia or the developing world or post-scarcity or 3D printing. But here's the thing. Entropy is a feature of the universe, and there are no magical entropy holes. You don't get to dump your problems down a hole. You don't. The best you can do is manage not to create more and try to solve the ones you face. But that's not the road we went down. And perhaps you just only have to start with 1 Samuel chapter 8, but the road we went down was the road of kings and queens and parliaments and governments and armies and taxes and bureaucrats and laws and regulations and laws. And can I say regulations and laws again? Because this stuff gums up the momentum, the direction of human existence. These things slow us down, and they don't help us in any way whatsoever. If someone tells you that regulators and regulations and laws if they tell you it's what we need to protect the environment, the only response I have to that is look around. It's not working. All these status solutions to the environment are a failure. Anywhere you go, every time the government tries to fix the ecosystem, invariably they destroy it. And in many cases, they just don't even want to fix it. All they do is go around the world blowing up countries and not caring that one of the side effects of every generation of warfare is toxification. I don't care if it's the Carthaginians pouring salt in southern Italy, or if it's all the depleted uranium that is currently salting the earth of the Persian Gulf and Middle East. There are consequences to these horrible actions, and there are no magical entropy holes. So if someone tells me, well, Dan, this can all go on forever, it can't, and it won't, and they won't tell you when it's failing for one of two reasons. One, because they don't want you to know, or two, because they don't know themselves. That they have so lost control of this out-of-control neo-Stalinist Rube Goldberg device, they have so lost control of the complexity and the energy pent up in the system that they themselves not only don't have control, which they don't, but they might not even know that. They might be sitting at the helm of a ship, steering the wheel, the ship more or less goes kind of the way they want it to, not understanding that that steering wheel connected to a rudder is doing nothing, and at some point it will fail. It could be that bad too. So you can call me crazy to think about feeding the dogs, but at least I'm meditating on an actual real life kind of question. What would you do to help a starving family? And if you're the last person to show up, if you're the last person in the boat, if they pull you out of the water to save your life, don't you owe that to the people that helped you? And I know you can say, well, Dan, that's not how doing things works. Yes and no. Kindness is something that does not have to have reciprocity, but that's also part of the nature of how kindness works. If it's actually kind, people remember this. And if someone else needs the help, those folks try to be kind themselves. That's how kindness should work. It's not about owing anybody anything. It's about doing the right thing, and if you're reminded of it because someone else is kind to you, it can mean you have a more powerful incentive to do the right thing. That's also how kindness works. So before you mock me and call me insane, and before we go to the next topic, which we should, yes, I've considered that, the whole issue of, you know, am I ready to be fed to the dogs? Would I poison them to death? Would I lead to a mutation that would create a super dog race from all my polluted genomics? Would this dog race rise up and feel a need for revenge? I don't know. But these dogs have helped me too, so I feel like I owe them something. So in the very least, I will hunt squirrel and I will get little creatures for them. That's the immediate solution. But I also know you run out of squirrels pretty fast. You run out of a lot of things fast when people go hungry. I know that there are people out there who will say, I will go to the forest and I will hunt deer for a while. For a while. But the likelihood that there's enough deer in the woods to feed 300 plus million people in the United States, let alone billions of people worldwide, that's not very likely, brothers and sisters. Next topic. And this one's kind of related. We have a theme here. It's about value. And if you think I don't value myself because I could consider allowing dogs to eat me if I die, understand this. I do value myself. But I also use a special kind of function. And you can call it quality of life if you want to, but it's not the government kind. The government definition of quality of life is really quality of slave. My definition of quality of life is really quite simple. Can I mostly, on this day, August the 19th, 2021, still do things that make me happy enough that I'm glad I'm alive? Then I have a great quality of life. That's how I define it. There's no number. There's no set of variables. Am I able to go and, for example, take dogs for a walk? If I couldn't take these dogs for a walk, you know, for example, if my health issues, which have been kind of improving, but not very quickly. But if my health issues got really bad and I couldn't take these dogs for a walk, that would be a lower quality of life. And so before I discuss the next topic, I want you to understand where I'm coming from. I'm not saying I want dogs to eat me, but if I'm living in a world where it looks like most people are going to starve to death, and there's already not enough food, and there's a family I'm living with, and I care about them, and I'm 51 years old, I don't have to have anyone else do the math but me. And if that sounds crazy, it just means you've never, ever, ever really thought about your wonderful little trolley problem. You know, add to the list of stupid things about the trolley problem. Yeah, every once in a while, death is clean. But in real life, for a lot of people in real situations, it's not clean. It's not some quick accident. It's not running someone over. It might be watching your sister slowly die of stage 4 cancer over 5 or 6 weeks with your siblings who are watching the same horrible thing that they've enjoyed watching like a couple years before with their mom. That's not fast. That's not a trolley running somebody over. That's pretty much torture and death. Add that to one of the problems with the trolley problem is that it ignores the fact that death has meaning. All forms of it. It's not one thing. It doesn't fit into a single category. If you think that all death is the same, then, brothers and sisters, you're going to have a rude awakening in the coming months and years. And you may understand my oft-repeated statement that what people really fear is not death. What people really fear is that there will be nobody left alive to bury them. That's what they fear. So this next topic has to do with how I value my life. And another way of looking at it, from my perspective as a 51-year-old dude, what is my time worth? Because if you were to say my time is worth, like, I don't know, less than it was 10, 15 years ago, that's total BS. Maybe for you, maybe because all you want to do is ride out the curve to the tiny point of singularity where there is either not enough money to keep you alive at 110 in the nursing home, or nobody cares to keep you alive, so they just kill you some night with a pillow. If you understand that somebody like me, and I don't think I'm alone, wants to live a full life and has no interest in slowly dwindling away, then the value of my time now is worth immensely more than it was 20 years ago. You see, I don't think I have 20 years left. I know a lot of people, you know, it's like Social Security, retirement, hella skiing in Switzerland, my Bitcoin will give me a Boeing superjet. I will have hookers, robot hookers, and we will have robot hooker sex at 3 miles up. Yeah. Robot hooker sex. And maybe you will be doing those things in your 70s and 80s. I have no earthly clue. But I, for one, I'm not wagering on it. I'm not wagering on being in that situation. I don't actually expect to be alive in 10 years. If I am, wow. That'll be amazing. That'll be optimistic. But I don't think I will be. And I'm not sure what will be the cause, you know. Could be any number of things. But the key point here, before I move on to the next topic, is that if you were to ask me, how much would I charge for an hour of work these days? Well, I'm not even sure. Given how much longer whatever you want to call this normality is supposed to last, how about $1 million an hour? How about $1 billion an hour? That should tell you exactly how much longer I think this nonsense is going to last. But I'm not going to get paid that, okay? I'm going to get paid on average at my point in my life between $40 and $60 an hour. Oh yeah, they advertise for super six-figure jobs in Seattle. I don't know how to tell you this, but a lot of those jobs are bullshit. They don't exist. They're crap. And there might be, for every advertised 100 of them, one of them might be real. The other are crap. It's a lot like a dating website. And the worst part about it is our government uses this dreck, this crap, and will tell you, oh, there are 8 billion job openings. Nobody wants to work. That is actual total bullshit. But that's what they'll tell you because what do they want to do to you? They want to confuse you and anger you. They want to stress you out. There's a pattern here. You see, I'm interested in quality of life. They are interested in quality of slave. Slaves should work, work, work until they're dead. They should take whatever drug they are told to take. They should take whatever vaccine they're told to take. And if all that's left is a tiny chunk of protein in the year 2058, sitting in some nursing home, you will extract as much economic rent from that socialist comrade until they just disappear into dust. And that's how you'll do it. One way or another, every bit and piece of what that person created in their life will be extracted in this neo-Stalinist hellhole, and you will never get a chance to take a break. Even on vacation, you will be working for them. You will be definitely in the consumer world they want you in. I, for one, don't want quality of slave. I want quality of life. So I guess, like the example with my dog, you know, not my dogs, but my friend's dogs, I'd say a few months hanging out with them in a cannibalistic hellhole future is worth saying, listen, guys, I'm imbued with at least 13 years of high quality THC and CBD probably. The dogs will love me. I've seen what they eat. I've seen what they eat, you know? They'll be okay. Next topic. A friend of mine sent me a news article that I don't even want to read much of it. I'll just kind of read the headline and talk about it. The article comes from the Gateway Pundit. It was published on August the 18th. And the author is Cassandra Fairbanks. And the headline is, Washington Hospital Removing Patients from Transplant List for Being Unvaccinated. Oh boy. And again, I'm not going to read this article because if you've been listening to me in recent weeks, you can read it yourself. I've already read it. If you go to the show notes, that's dfgtc.org/show notes, and you pick the right date, you'll get the right notes, and you can click on this link and read this very fearful article. Because a lot of people, if you are deeply invested in this paradigm, you have been told they can fix anything. Well, they can, right? Maybe, maybe not. But you've been told this. So you've been told you can get your heart replaced. Who knows where it comes from? You can get your liver replaced. Don't ask questions. You can get a brand new almost anything. Just don't ask too many questions about where those organs come from. Or the fact that you more or less have to take an organ from a living person. So if they're not brain dead, then you're basically murdering people to take their organs. Yes, yes, yes. It's so interesting, the organ thing. You should research that sometime. But a lot of Americans, even the ones that go to church, don't believe in God, don't believe in heaven, don't believe in consequences. But they do believe what their smart device tells them. And their smart device tells them that they live in a magical future where all their insides can be replaced. You know, everything can be replaced, right? Unless you don't get the vaccine. So if you want to understand the fear of this article, understand its audience. Its audience is not Christians. Christians read this and they say, well, it seems like there's some stuff going on here that we should dig into further, brothers and sisters. Christians, I think, you know, people who do believe in Jesus Christ and have a sense of discernment, I don't think they're driven away in fear. They might find this revolting if it were true, but I don't think they're driven away in fear. But I think there are fearful, atheistic type people out there, don't believe in God. They do believe in quote unquote science. And so, wow, if I don't get the vaccine, I won't get my heart replaced in 2034. I won't have my hooker stripper future after my wife dies. Because that's what I've been planning on. Yeah. Your hooker stripper future is gone. Gone. I will leave it to you to read the article how the University of Washington Medical Center is going to deny people transplants, or their committee will deny transplants, or someone will. And then I'll leave you a research project to dig deeply into this issue of transplants. Because I gotta say, I think there's some shadiness going on. So yeah, we should go on to the next topic before we feed the fear monkey anymore here, right? I just can't believe it, folks. It's like someone reads an article like this. And, you know, I'm going to read it anyways because I might as well. I'm going to read some of it. So this article, headline, Washington Hospital Removing Patients from Transplant List for Being Unvaccinated, by Cassandra Fairbanks, published on the Gateway Pundit, August 18, 2021, BoBlimpDoc. The University of Washington Medical Center has kicked several patients off their transplant waiting list for not being vaccinated, according to reports. Seattle station KTTH reports UW Medicine removed a 64-year-old patient from the transplant wait list. He says he was on the list for 2.5 years. The hospital made the decision after they learned the patient refused to be vaccinated against the monkey herpes, the COVID. They said they would consider adding him back to the wait list should he satisfy their compliance concerns. And I quote, "Last week, one vaccine-hesitant patient came forward. He says he was told the vaccine was mandatory before he could get a necessary liver transplant. The hospital does not deny any of the allegations," the report continued. "In June, Sam Allen of Monroe learned that his heart transplant surgery was on the line over his refusal to get the COVID vaccine. Allen is suffering from a mitral valve regurgitation, tricuspid valve regurgitation, aortic valve regurgitation, aneurysm of the thoracic aorta, and dilated cardiomyopathy." Wow. The outlet explained that he has 3 leaky heart valves impact the blood pumping into his lungs, so he has not been wearing a mask due to difficulty breathing. Well, that kind of makes sense, doesn't it? I'm going to let you guys read the rest of this on your own. Like I said, go to dfgtc.org/shownotes. That's Delta Foxtrot Golf Tango Charlie.org/shownotes. The link is there. If you pick the right date for the right show, it's in ascending order. You can figure that out. I don't want to read more of this article because I think it's designed to enrage. I don't even know if it's true. I'm not sure how many of these stories are true. I'm pretty certain that if they wanted to cut off these enraging stories, they could, but they're not. It doesn't appear that they're totally blacking out the world. I got some confirmation about Australia from a friend of mine, and it does appear as if, according to my friend's friend, that Australia is going ape shit over the monkey herpes again, which is fine. That's their path, right? It's horrible. It's disastrous. It's gross, but fine. I don't know if the hospitals are doing this. I wouldn't be surprised. But I'll also say this. You remember what I said, how they're coming up with excuses? Listen, in order to transplant organs, you have to have them. And they don't last forever. If you consider the effect of the vaccine crap on people, the real issue are not the receivers. It's the fact that a lot of people that would donate are not going to donate because of this dumb vaccine stuff. So why don't you read this article as a Sovietologist and recognize the possibility that they might not have any organs to transplant? So why not just say, oh, they won't take the vaccination, come up with a bullshit story, tell people it's all about the vaccination, and who knows, maybe it'll force people to get the vaccination or go to the hospital, almost die. We can take their organ, and old Mr. Schlimbob, who ran a hedge fund, can get a brand new heart so he can go screw his hooker mistress. So go get your vaccination. Yeah. I think if you choose to go to a hospital at this point, you are choosing to take your life into your own hands, so to speak, and toss it into a giant swimming pool filled with cobras. Is it possible that you could survive a swimming pool filled with cobras? Maybe. King cobras? Maybe, right? But the likelihood isn't very high. Next topic, brothers and sisters. Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. "It would feel like nothing if it weren't for God. It would feel like nothing if it were not for God." And I know that may sound like a far-flung easy to dismiss argument for the existence of God, but I don't believe it is. I think that it requires thought, and I don't think it proves God exists, but it's hard for me to imagine the purpose of two things in the universe if this was all chance, if it was all an accident. And I know that people will say the multiverse, so whatever bizarreness I find is simply a symptom of being in a bizarre universe. Maybe. I don't know. I don't really believe in the multiverse, so it's hard for me to accept that position. And I have my own interpretation of Schrodinger's paradox, so I don't really have an issue with superposition. I don't. It's not a logical problem for me. For some people, they have to go to the multiverse. For me, nah, not really. The multiverse sounds like BS to me. It doesn't sound like something God would be, you know, involved in. He created one world, one universe, so yeah. I don't think he created an infinite number. And I don't believe there are an infinite number of gods. So, anywho, I don't believe in the multiverse. So if, in fact, this universe is just one universe, and it is governed by some degree of logic and probability, then it's hard to imagine why it is that it's not just people, but other creatures as well. And this includes dogs, for example. I think that we are special in terms of our intelligence, but there are two things we have that a lot of other creatures have. We have consciousness. Listen. The time I spent with the African gray parrot, Mr. Juma, shout out to Mr. Juma in Washington State. The shout out to that guy, that little 15-year-old African gray parrot, was a brilliant animal. It formed sentences. It made requests. It had behaviors. And no one's going to tell me nothing's going on in there. Yeah, I'm sure there's a scientific explanation for it, but there's something going on. So consciousness is in a lot of places. No one's going to tell me that these dogs I'm hanging out with are not conscious or not aware. They are. So there's one thing, consciousness. And then another thing gets tossed in. Feelings. Emotions, feelings. Why? I mean, consciousness is bad enough, but then you toss in feelings. So not only are you aware, but you can be aware of some really nasty crap. You can be aware of a world where people can treat each other brutally, where in fact, being murdered by being run over by a trolley might be the least worst way to go. Consciousness allows you to see that, but to have feelings about that world, to be emotionally connected to that world, that can be painful. That can be tragedy, that can be misery, that can be ennui, that can be the absolute state of darkness where nothing ever seems like it's going to be okay again. But, it can also be joy. It can be falling in love. It can be having a really, really good Indian style curry at a restaurant. It can be the first kiss. It can be the first time you drove a convertible. It can be walking a dog, actually. It can definitely be music, and I'm not saying mine or whatever noise you hear from here, but it can be music. It can be Beethoven. It can be Marvin Gaye. It can be Ella Fitzgerald. It can be Wagner. It can be Rachmaninoff, Symphony No. 2, all the movements. You see, consciousness and feelings together can be, at times, a dungeon of darkness and pain, and it can be so cold and so damp that you might think there's never going to be a way out. And for some people, it can be so extreme that they'll convince themselves there's never going to be a way out. But consciousness and feelings, you put those things together, that can be the best party you ever went to. It can be the New Year's Eve party you never forget. if you were a quarterback and you had a great game in high school, that one great game that won you the state championship, consciousness will be that memory of you succeeding in that moment, of feeling as if you've never been more alive. Consciousness is 1997 at Fort Benning, Georgia. Jumping out of 5 planes over a course of a week. And it was one of the happiest times I had in the Army, jumping out of a plane. I never went airborne. I never became really HUA. I never went special forces or light infantry. But spending that time at airborne school was one of the best times in my life. I don't like the military. I don't think we should go around blowing up people, and I'm not proud of it. But I'll tell you, airborne school, in retrospect, even though I acknowledged the stuff that was crap, was awesome. The summer of 1993, working on that boat in the Gulf of Alaska. Consciousness and emotion took what could have been a cold mechanical experience and turned it into something more. But what's critical is the reason why the world and a lot of people want to express beauty, not just artists, not just special people, but the reason why it's almost like innate to people to want to create beauty is because our consciousness and our emotion connecting with the world says, let's have more joy than sadness. Let's do more to build than destroy. Let's bring life in rather than ushering it out. And it's hard for me to imagine how all of that could be true and there's no God. Now you could say, well, there could be many gods. It could be a simulation. There are lots of potential explanations, and I've been down those roads. And I could be wrong. So if you're an atheist or not a Christian, but just have a different belief system, I'm going to say, God bless, you have a right to your beliefs, and I could be wrong. But one thing you'd have to at least admit, no matter what your spiritual belief system is there's something uncanny and purposeful, which means there's purpose to it. There's a teleological power to the fact that we are not only conscious, but we feel pleasure, we feel pain, we feel happiness, we feel sadness. And there's nothing that tells me you couldn't short-circuit that and have responses that result in, from a nature perspective, the same kinds of things. You know, stuff is born, stuff dies, but stuff doesn't really care. We're the stuff that cares. We are made of stuff that cares. That is spooky, that's uncanny, and that is worth thinking on. And I don't believe it's an accident. Now, that's not a proof for God. I don't believe you can prove the existence of God. I think that's why we have this word called faith. And you can call me nutty and stupid for saying that's all you're left with, but you are. I mean, I have lots of intuitions that tell me there is a God, but none of it fits into the category of mathematical, logical, or scientific proof. Not definitively, right? There is something special and uncanny about this, and I think it's worth thinking on. I don't know. I had some more topics for today, and I may move them to the next podcast. Probably will. I don't really want to talk about Afghanistan. I don't. I know there are people out there that feel like they know what the truth is. I don't really know. It could be everything we've been told. The U.S. prematurely exited Afghanistan without taking care of the troops and the contractors. Because that's the thing. When they say that they might have left 10,000 troops behind in Afghanistan, something to consider is that that could be realistic because of contractors. And you know what? I don't think our government would treat contractors very well in that circumstance. I think they would dump them like garbage, like the M16s. So is it possible that there are thousands of contractors left behind in Afghanistan currently facing some type of gruesome imprisonment and torture and murder? It's entirely possible. But what do you do about it? I don't know. I look at Afghanistan and I say it's a problem that we definitely helped to make worse and we might have kind of created. And if you want to like find people accountable, find accountable the idiots who thought that going there was a good idea. Better yet, find accountable the people involved in 9/11, and I don't mean Osama bin Laden. Sorry. Research World Trade Center 7 and understand that if the plastic office crap was so dangerous it could take down a building, they wouldn't allow you to buy it. So yeah, the story of World Trade Center 7, the building that fell several hours after the first two, that's a good story. You need to research that if you don't know anything about it. And there's a lot of BS in that story. I'm mentioning the Afghanistan thing in the closing minutes because I don't want to talk about it, but people would say, well, how can you be a planetary status report and not talk about that? I'll tell you why. Because I don't know if I'm being told the truth, and I don't think you do either. I don't know that we're the only ones being subjected to these types of mind control, PSYOP propaganda type operations. I'm sure other countries are being exposed to it as well, but that doesn't help me because all it means is that this nonsense is global. And I'm left with one of two conclusions. Either A, the central bank empire is in collapse, and this is the smokescreen they're putting up to cover their exit. I don't know where they exit to. Maybe they took all that money and built some spaceships. Maybe there are already condos on Mars. Maybe they have a secret facility in Antarctica where they'll live there and they've got laser cannons. So if all the peasants come for revenge, they'll just shoot it. I don't know. One possibility of two is that all of this nonsense is designed to protect them for as long as it can work. And it can't work forever. People will drop dead from this nonsense, if only from stress. So it's all of it has a shelf life. That's one possibility. The other possibility is they're covering up something so bad, so terrible, that people would rather believe in a mysterious Bigfoot plague than actually look deeper into the truth. But again, it's easier to believe that they're going to reject, you know, a hospital's going to reject money, bullshit. It's easier to believe that because of the vaccine than to recognize the possibility that they don't have any organs. There are no organs there. No one's donating. There are none. If you're listening on shortwave radio, this has been WRMI out of Miami, Okeechobee. 5950 kilohertz. 5950 kilohertz every Saturday, Sunday night. Every Saturday, Sunday night, 11 p.m. till midnight. And if you're interested in finding out about one of our projects, go to dfgtc.org/AEN and tune in to 7235 kilohertz, 40 meters lower sidebound, lower sideband, sidebound. And you can potentially participate in our Agorist Emergency Network. That is 7235 kilohertz. It is a network that allows people to test their shortwave radios prior to an emergency. So please tune in after the show to 7235 kilohertz from midnight until at least 12:30 Saturday, Sunday night, Eastern Standard Time. That is midnight till at least 12:30 Saturday, Sunday night, Eastern Standard Time. And until we meet again, brothers and sisters, be prepared to be dog food. Be prepared to feed Fido. They were always there for you. They're always there for you.